Welcome back to the Keystone Kickoff Show, brought to you by Halt Daddy Hazy IPA, award-winning beer by Greater Good Brewing, built by Penn Staters for PA. Look for the green can at your local retailer.
Hello and welcome to the Keystone Kickoff Show. I'm Jim Galante, along with Sports Illustrated Big Ten writer Dustin Schutte. Dustin, how are you doing, my friend?
I'm doing great, Jim. How are you?
I'm good. Ready to thaw out. We've got the Arctic cold coming through. But we missed you last week. You missed our show last week, so it's great to have you back again. Although, I cannot understand. What in the world, Dustin, could be more important in your life than recording with us? I do not understand. Please help me out.
Well, I had to take a trip to Florida, Jim, to get out of this. To get out of this Arctic freeze, right? Isn't that important? But there were some big things that happened my life last week that made it tough for me to join.
You care to share with our listeners, or are you going to keep it a secret?
Well, I suppose the secret's out now, right? I got engaged on last Monday. Monday. I think about which day it was. So, and then followed up with a trip to Disney World. It was a nice week.
Fantastic. Well, congratulations from the Keystone Sports world. All of our listeners, I'm sure they're all happy for you. But I do got to find out one thing. You are not going to make the absolute mistake like we've seen and schedule your wedding for a fall Saturday, are you?
No, it's already been discussed, and it will be either in like a May, June type summer. So we're away from college football and college basketball, March Madness. So
very good. Very good. All right, Dustin, while you were away getting engaged, college football world went on with the playoffs, and Monday night we had the finale. We had the national championship game. It was Ohio State, Notre Dame. Ohio State holds on to win it, Dustin. Now, you're a Midwest guy. You're also a Big Ten writer. Did that mean you had the rooting interest? You were rooting for the home conference?
I've told people this before, and they kind of disagreed with me. So a few weeks ago, when people were asking me what my ultimate national championship game would be, I said, I've covered the conference since 2013 or 14, somewhere in there. I said, I would love to see a Penn State, Ohio State national championship. I'd love to see an all big title game. So, yes, a part of me was definitely polling for Ohio State just because I've covered the conference for so long. But the other part of me was just like, this is a really good matchup. I think Marcus Freeman's a really likable head coach. Notre Dame's had a really good story in terms of overcoming that loss to Northern Illinois and just kind of dominating their way to the national championship game. It was just a great game. And a great, like, traditional college football matchup. And what's funny to me, Jim, is it was the number 7 and number 8 seeds. I don't think those were the 7th and 8th best teams in college football, but already year one, we had Ohio, or in year one of the 14 playoff, Ohio State won, I believe, as the 4 seed, and then this year they win as the 8th seed. So to answer your question, the long story is, yes, I did have a little bit of a rooting interest.
Well, it's funny you talk about the history with Ohio State. The first time they went to the 14 playoff, they won. And now the change to the 12-team playoff, they won. I saw where Ohio State fan was lobbying for them to change the rules again for next year, because every time there's new rules that they seem to win. And what I thought made the game more interesting, well, first of all, it was interesting from a Penn State standpoint. You were just raised to not like either Notre Dame or Ohio State as rivals, and you just naturally root against them. But all of the things that happened this year with the Southeast Conference and the picking out of fans, that at least for me, it created the first time in my life that I actually rooted for Ohio State. Okay. And it was that Big Ten attachment. Never mind that I also had a few dollars on them, but that's beside the point. But what I thought was interesting and made the game fascinating was, let's start with the opening drive. Notre Dame physically dominated on that opening drive, marched it down the field, took about 10 minutes for that first drive. So they were going to reduce the number of possessions. They physically beat up Ohio State, it seemed like, and took a 7-0 lead. Is there anything in the world that could have gone better for Notre Dame to start this game?
No, I mean, I think if you ask Marcus Freeman what he would say is the ideal opening drive of that game and what they could do to set the tone, that was it. Like, I got a text from my brother who was watching. He said, what? That was just a bully drive. Like, they were moving them around. They looked like the more physical, more dominant team. I mean, that was an impressive first drive. And then they couldn't really do it again until the fourth quarter. So, and what's interesting, Jim, is I think I do wonder if I was an Ohio State fan, if there was a feeling of here we go again, because this was a team that, remember, this is a team that was down early to Northwestern. I don't remember if they were down 2 touchdowns. That was like 2 months ago, and I don't remember what I had for breakfast yesterday. But they were down like 7-0, and maybe Northwestern was knocking on the door, forced to turnover. They struggled early in games. Penn State, they got down early, and with the way Notre Dame had been playing and the way that Notre Dame's defense plays, I think if you go down 7-0 early and you don't look like you can get a stop, you're kind of thinking, oh boy, we could be in for a long day. But obviously they kicked it into high gear quickly after that. So, but Notre Dame controlled that. It was, I thought we were in store for a smash mouth, drag out, knock them out type of game from start to finish after watching that those first 10 minutes and Notre Dame just marched down the field and scored.
And to show you how the tone of the game could change so quickly on fairly small plays, Ohio State then gets the ball, their first possession. They ended up, and I'm just looking it up, they ended up with the 3rd and 5 in their first series. I remember thinking to myself, my goodness, if Ohio State goes 3 and out and gives Notre Dame the ball right back, heck, Ohio State may not see the ball again before halftime. The way Notre Dame played, but Ohio State converts the third down. They go on to score a touchdown, and they end up scoring 3 touchdowns in a row. They're up 21-7 at halftime. They're going to get the second half kickoff. Looks like game over, Dustin, at that point.
Yeah. Do you know what's funny? I'm going to go back to the first half. When Ohio State had the second possession, and it was tied 7-7. They just looked like, it almost looked like it was going to get out of hand. It looked like, and that sounds crazy in a tie game, but you just saw like Ohio State was doing whatever it wanted to do offensively. And it just felt like, oh boy, Notre Dame's going to be in for a long day. And for a long time, they were. They go down and rip off what, like a 75-yard run, 70, probably 70, because I think they got down to about the 5-yard on the first play of the third quarter. And you thought that was, you know, basically the death knell. And that, I mean, really good offensive game plan from Ohio State. And what impressed me about that, Jim, is obviously they did some good things through the air, but they ran the ball extremely well. They did some, they had some trick plays in there. They ran the ball well with Will Howard. Like, everybody's going to talk about Jeremiah Smith, who made some big plays in that game, but their rushing attack was really, really good. It might have been one of the best efforts all season.
Well, yeah, they scored 4 touchdowns in a row. The next possession, they end up with a field goal. They're up 31-7. I'm already counting my winnings at that point, Dustin, okay? A lot of credit has to go to Notre Dame for, you're down 31-7. There was always the potential, you mentioned earlier when it was tied 7-7 and Ohio State had the ball, you get the feeling like, uh-oh, here it comes. Here comes the blowout. But that's kind of justified when you saw them do that same thing to Tennessee. You saw them do it to Oregon, the undefeated number one team in the country, and Ohio State just boat raced them. you thought, here we go again. And at 31-7, it sure looked that way.
Yeah, I mean, I thought it was game over. Like, my brother and I do a lot of texting during these games, and he just sent me a text. He's doing a reread of the Harry Potter series, and he decided that he was going to read a book. I don't know which number he was on, but he was going to read it. And so then I had to text him back, touchdown, and then when Notre Dame scored, and then the fumble there, which ironically is on, in my opinion, that was on Chris Fowler, who had on that, before the ball was snapped on that very play, said, Ohio State never fumbles. They've only lost 5 all season. Turnovers very unlikely. And then what do? They get like a 40-yard gain and fumble the football. So, yeah, they get, like, Notre Dame deserves a lot of credit. I think a lot of teams in that situation would have folded and just been like, you know what, we got here, but our time's over. They fought till the very end. And that was an admirable effort, but that was, and you know what's funny, Jim, and I'm sure we'll talk about this. As much as Notre Dame got back into the game, and I think a lot of people were critical of the way Ryan Day and Chip Kelly were calling the offense, I never thought that they weren't being aggressive. I just think they had that big turnover. And then on that final play, on that third and whatever it was, long, to just drop back and heave it all the way down the field for Jeremiah Smith. Woo! I mean, Ryan Day was not playing. Scared money don't make money is what they say, right? He was not going to lose that game on a conservative play call.
Well, I did want to address that potential conservative play calling. But before I do, you brought up the Chris Fowler saying, well, they don't fumble the ball. They don't turn it over. The announcer jinx. I don't know if you remember, a week ago, Penn State, Notre Dame, Penn State with the last possession in a tie game. And they asked Greg McElroy, the color guy, well, how do you play it here? Do you get conservative or do you go for it? Oh, you got to go for it. Drew Aller he's very careful with the ball. He doesn't throw interceptions. That was the kiss of death, Dustin. So the announcer jinx, I think, is real.
Yeah. Well, I believed in it since college basketball free throws. I've seen too many misses when the announcer talks about how good. So I've been a longtime believer.
Okay. Same here. Well, we're going to finish talking about the championship game before we get on to other things when we come back here. I want to specifically ask you about Marcus Freeman's decision to kick the field goal when he was down 16 points. We'll do that when we come back. Every day is a great day to join us at Cafe 210 West to enjoy our daily drink specials. Mondays, it's the Cafe Tea Pitcher for $5. Tuesday, Smirnoff pitchers for $7. Wednesday, Bacardi pitchers are $7. And Thursdays, enjoy Cafe Tea pitchers for $5. All week, we have half-off draft beer and cafe tea from 9 to 11 p.m. and 6 to 8 p.m. on Fridays. So get the gang together and come on down to Cafe 210.
Welcome back to the Keystone Kickoff Show, brought to you by Hulk Daddy Hazy IPA, award-winning beer by Greater Good Brewing, built by Penn Staters for PA. Look for the green can at your local retailer.
Hello and welcome back to the Keystone Kickoff Show. I'm Jim Galante. He is Sports Illustrated Big Ten writer Dustin Schutte. It's quarter number two of our show. We were talking about the Ohio State-Notre Dame game from Monday night. We were at the point where Ohio State, they had the – you said you didn't think they got conservative. I think if somehow they ended up losing the game or blowing that lead, we would have heard a lot of that kind of talk. And I know this is putting it in a funny way, but if you're Ohio State and you have so many weapons, running backs, plural – so many wide receiver weapons, it's like, well, which way do we go? We're running the ball well, so we should have to go away from that. But if you got the best wide receiver in the country, man, I think you got to feed them.
Yeah, and they did. On that final play, Ryan Day, he's got some courage and a lot of faith in those guys. Like, that was one of the gutsiest play calls, I think, in that situation. Now, they were obviously, they were up with 8 at that point, 31-23. So they still would have to go down and get a touchdown and then a 2-point conversion. But for Ryan Day to say, you know what, we're not just going to run this and milk clock and give them the ball with the momentum that they might have. I'm going to try to end it right here. But yeah, you're right. They could have gone any way because everything was working for them. Like, they gave up a touchdown in Notre Dame late, but if they don't fumble that football, like, they hit a big pass play earlier when they fumbled the football. They don't fumble it, and we're talking, like, that was probably the biggest difference. I think Ohio State scores there. It's 38-15, and it's end of game. Notre Dame's done. So I think a lot of people will say it got a little conservative, but I just don't think that was the case. I think they had an unfortunate, ill-timed turnover.
Yes, and this Penn State audience is very familiar with that poorly timed turnover. But let's talk about getting to that point, though. And that was a 3rd and 11, and I'm looking at the game cast. It was still 2.5 minutes left in the game. So if they don't convert, Notre Dame has plenty of time. But now what we had, though, prior to that, though, Dustin, was Notre Dame still with, I think it was over 9 minutes left in the game. They're knocking on the door. They're down 2 touchdowns, and it's 3rd and goal from the 9-yard line. Now they choose to go for the field goal. Let's forget for a moment that it was missed. At that point, Dustin Schutte on his Barca Lounger watching this game. What are you saying about that decision?
I liked it. Maybe I don't like it. I would have done the same thing. And the reason for that is, in that situation, you're down 16 points. So you've got to get 2 touchdowns and 2 extra points, and nothing was working in the red zone against Ohio State. Like, they shut everything down. So to me, you take those points with over 9 minutes to go. You've got essentially 4 timeouts with a 2-minute warning, and you hope your defense can get some stops. On the last 2 drives, Ohio State had a field goal, and then they had that fumble. So I think, and Notre Dame had scored a touchdown. So I think Marcus Freeman could sense, we've won games this year with our defense. If we can get this thing down to 2 scores, we don't have to worry about the 2-point conversion. So I understand why people are like, you got to get the touchdown, you got to get the points, or you got to get the touchdown, you got to make it a 1-score game. But in all honesty, there's no guarantee that you make it a 1-score game. You could be essentially in the same position, but instead of down 13, you're down 10. Well, you still need 2 scores at that point. So I can hate the decision. I understand why people would want to go for it in that circumstance. But yeah, because if later in that game, I don't know, can I do math on this show, Jim?
We don't typically encourage math on the show, but we will tolerate it.
There's going to be smoke coming out of my ears. I'm too hard here. It's going to be a 13-point game. Then Notre Dame scores again. It's 18, 25, or 26. They could have made it a 5-point game. And essentially then that field goal that Ohio State kicks is an 8-point game. So then you still have a desperation. That's if everything plays out the same way. So I think there's a lot of math and analytics involved there, but I think that Marcus Freeman was more like, if we're going to win this game, we're going to have to get stops anyway. So let's just take the points and hope our defense can get 2 more stops and our offense can muster something together.
Well, the fact is they were going to need 2 scores anyway. I'm with you. I debated ahead of time. I hate when it's second guessing. You know, I want to know, what did you say before the play actually happened? And I was like, wait a minute, I'm not sure. In fact, I believe the announcers were saying, 4-down territory, you got to go for it. I think Chris Fowler was a bit surprised. But I quickly thought, well, you know what? As you pointed out, it wasn't just 2 touchdowns. It was also 2 2-point conversions needed to happen. And, you know, ask the Baltimore Ravens about, you can't assume those 2-point conversions are going to happen. The other thing is, with 9 minutes left, that's an awful lot of time. And one last thing to it, Dustin, is because it remained 8-point margin instead of five, Ohio State had the ball, as we pointed out, that last play to Jeremiah Smith, it was third and 11 and still 2:45 left. So at that point, obviously you can't assume a stop at third and 11, but you got to feel pretty good about it. And Ohio State is pretty deep in their own territory. You got to think at that point, you're going to get the ball back with more than 2 minutes to go, down one score, either 8 points, or if you had made the chip shot field goal, Notre Dame would, if they could have had a third and 11 stop, Dustin, again, assuming things went the way they did, a third and 11 stop, you've got the ball essentially last possession, down only 5 points. You're going for the win at that point. So I think actually what happened afterwards was confirmation of Marcus Freeman making a good decision.
I think so too. And I think a lot of times people, like this microwave society, I've seen it so many times where people will say, or coaches will go for a touchdown. Now, I don't have a specific example off the top of my head because it's early when we're recording this. Well, nonetheless, how many times have you seen where if a coach just kicked a field goal earlier in the game, they win? They lose by 1 or 2 points, or maybe it's 3 points and it would have gone to overtime. But they went for the, they tried to go for the points. Like, to me, kicking the field goal a lot of times is the right decision. And I know that's probably an old school way of thinking, because Jim, not only like Notre Dame got what they wanted, Ohio State ran five plays and Notre Dame forced a punt. The drive lasted 3 minutes. So now you get the ball back down 13 with 6 minutes to go. Okay, we get to put together another drive, which they did. Six plays, 80 yards, 210, and it's a one score game. And as you mentioned, depending on if they go for two or kick the extra point, it's a 5 or 6 point game. So then if you get the ball back, as you mentioned, you're going for the win. So, I understand why when you're in that situation, if you're a Notre Dame fan, you're probably thinking, well, why are we making a two-score game a two-score game? But again, you miss one of those two-point conversions, and it's suddenly a three-score game.
Exactly. And I'm one of those who actually – I do believe in and like the analytics. I do like going for it more often than most traditionalists feel. But at that point, I think with Penn State, James Franklin has been criticized a lot for making some of these decisions. Oftentimes for him, it's he goes for it on fourth down. And anytime he doesn't make it, boy, does he get criticized. But I think the mistake that James Franklin makes sometimes, and I don't think Marcus Freeman made the mistake here, was understanding the specific situation in your game. This wasn't fourth and goal from the 9 against just anybody. It's against Ohio State, who does very well at that. And what is your confidence level there? It's not like you're playing, you know, oh, some cupcake like Northern Illinois in this game.
Right. And I don't know. I'd have to go back and watch because I'm not very good at the X's and O's. Timeout. I just got what you did with the Northern Illinois reference there, Jim.
I was wondering if it went over your head or not. Like you said, it's early recording, but... But yeah, I tried to do it with a straight face, and I was waiting for a reaction. So I'm glad it came. It was a little delayed, but I'm glad you got it.
Well, people are thinking to think that my computer froze or whatever. But no, we're good. We're good. I got it. It just took me a while. But to that point, I'm not a big X's and O's guy. I don't understand it as much, but I can usually understand trends. And what I don't know is, I don't think there was a play that Notre Dame kept going back to the well in and that it was working consistently against Ohio State. If you have those one or two plays that are working for you throughout the game, maybe you go for it in that situation. You feel pretty good about your chances. But I think Notre Dame hit on plays, but I don't think they hit on like one play consistently throughout the game that they could rely on. And so I think that's another reason why they decided to kick the field goal there. Yeah, and that defense was shutting them down in the red zone. none of those plays first through third down looked good. Like, they didn't have a shot. So I think Marcus Freeman's thinking, let's get some points, let's get some confidence, and then tell our guys to go get a couple of stops. And again, they did that next drive. Five plays, 3 minutes, Notre Dame gets the ball back, and then they go down and score. So again, I liked the call. I don't know if I liked it, but I agreed with it.
Well, I'll tell you what, and earlier we were talking about the announcer jinx. I want to share with you the gambler's jinx, okay?
I didn't know the spread for this. What did you get it at? Because I didn't know the spread.
I got it late, and it was 8.5 points.
Oh, boy. Okay.
So from the time, you know, it got within 16, well, first of all, it was a 24-point spread. Start doing your math. And, you know, when Notre Dame scores that the first touchdown, I'm thinking, please do not make the 2-point conversion. Well, there you go. And then as the game ends with Ohio State up 8 points, I'm thinking, please make it so they need the field goal to ice this game. And that, my friend, is how a gambler roots for a football game. I was the second happiest man after Ryan Day when that chip shot field goal went in. All right, that is it for quarter number two. We got more to go with Dustin. Stay tuned. Every day is a great day to join us at Cafe 210 West to enjoy our daily drink specials. Mondays, it's the Cafe Tea Pitcher for $5. Tuesday, Smirnoff Pitchers for $7. Wednesday, Bacardi Pitchers are $7. And Thursdays, enjoy Cafe Tea Pitchers for $5. All week, we have half-off draft beer and cafe tea from 9 to 11 p.m. and 6 to 8 p.m. on Fridays. So get the gang together and come on down to Cafe 210.
Welcome back to the Keystone Kickoff Show, brought to you by Hulk Daddy Hazy IPA, award-winning beer by Greater Good Brewing, built by Penn Staters for PA. Look for the green can at your local retailer.
Hello and welcome back to the Keystone Kickoff Show. I'm Jim Galante. He is Dustin Schutte, who is obviously still waking up, getting his act together this morning. It's quarter number three of our show. And Dustin, we spent the first two segments talking specifically about the Notre Dame-Ohio State championship game. And I'm with you. I thought it was a very good game. I want to take a look now, take a step back and kind of look at the bigger picture of this 12-team playoff. Now that we've got it under our belt, what do you think? Did it work out? Were you happy with it?
Yeah, I was really happy with it. And I know a lot of people will probably look at the first round and talk about needing to reseed and maybe making some tweaks. I'm not in favor of that just yet. Maybe at some point we'll need some tweaks to it. I want to see how this plays out for maybe 3 or 4 years and just before we decide to make changes to it, because again, I think I've mentioned this before. Even when we had four teams, there were a lot of blowouts, especially in those semifinal games. So it's never going to be a perfect system. You see in March Madness all the time, you might get a game with between a 4 and a 5 seed, and the 4 seed wins by 30 points. Sometimes it's just somebody's day. So I liked it. And then in addition, we got some really good games in the quarterfinals and semifinals, and then the national championship game was kind of a snoozer for three quarters, but then it got really good late. And then, but again, I think where it was most beneficial and where a lot of fans found a lot of investment and excitement was you had games in late October and early November through late November. The entire Big 12 was up, you know, potentially in the hunt for a playoff spot. Like, those games mattered more than they ever have before. And that was really cool to see. You had teams fighting for their life, and it just created such good debate, such good entertainment. You got teams that are 8-2 in the final 2 weeks of the season, where normally it's like, okay, well, let's hope to get to 10 wins. And now it's like, okay, you know what? Let's hope to get to 10 wins and get a playoff spot. Right? Like, let's try to steal something here. So for that, I think there's a lot of entertainment value. I think it worked, and I think that's what we all wanted, is we didn't want this to be an invitational. We wanted some sort of criteria where you have to make the field. We wanted it to be expanded so we could get more teams in it. And now I think it's just a matter of time. Now, it's not going to be quick, but it's going to be a matter of time before this kind of levels the playing field in some capacity where, you know, I don't think – I'm going to use Indiana as an example. I don't think you're going to have Indiana in the playoff every single year, right? I just don't think they have the pedigree, and I don't think they have the resources to do that. But what I do think is that you will have teams that maybe one year it's Indiana, maybe the next year it's Illinois, maybe one year it's Mississippi State. You know, those are just some examples of getting new teams in there, and that will disperse and help some of this recruiting, I think. We've seen that in college basketball, and I don't know why it can't work for college football.
I'm in agreement with you, and a lot of the things you mentioned, people who are critical of those first-round blowouts. That happens in every playoff. It, like you mentioned, it was happening when we had a 14 playoff. The one thing I would tweak is that seeding thing where the four conference champions, and again, that was designed when there was still a Pac-12 and there was still a Big 12 that had Texas and Oklahoma. If you still had that scenario, you would have probably had Oregon from the Pac-12. You would have had Texas from the Big 12, along with either Penn State or Ohio State from the Big 10, Georgia or Texas from the Southeast Conference, and it would have looked good. Now, the one thing to understand, though, is the contract, it's on a 2-year kind of temporary basis. So this past season and one more season is under this separate contract where to get them to change any of those things to make the tweak, I think they should get rid of that automatic top four. I think the automatic bid is fine for conference champions, but not the seeded 1-4 because Penn State, no doubt, it was advantageous to them. Mm-hmm. If you're Oregon, boy, you got a tough road, and that's because you finished number one. So I think they need to fix that, but there's no way they're going to change that because they need unanimous, and you already have the ACC commissioner, for example, already come out and say, well, you know, I think it would cheapen the regular season. He says everything but the truth, which is it would hurt my conference.
Right, exactly. And, you know, the other interesting aspect of that, Jim, is it makes me wonder if sometime we'll get to 16 teams. I think we will. But all four teams that had a bye lost in their first game. And this, again, this there were favorable matchups, but is it really advantageous to get a bye? And I don't know. Like, 1 year sample size is not enough. Ohio State had already played Oregon, so they knew them pretty well. I think even though Boise State was a really good team, I think we all knew that Penn State was better, especially in the trenches. And we saw that Georgia was without their starting quarterback. And then Arizona State was kind of the darling, right? And got there. Put up a good fight against Texas, but ended up losing. So I don't know if you determine that those buys are not favorable, then do you just move on to a 16 team format? I don't know the answer.
Now, this is just opinion. And as you put it, it's a very small sample, just 1 year. I don't necessarily think the buy hurt those teams. I think it was the matchups that hurt them. Sure. I believe all four of those games, the lower seeded teams were favored either by a lot or at least a little bit. So even Ohio State, Oregon, Ohio State was favored by a little bit. And I think those of us who watched those teams, two teams closely, probably felt neutral field, I would favor Ohio State over Oregon. So I don't think that there's any issue there. The other question I had about the playoff format, and I'll ask you about it, and it is getting some play, is this stretched out for so long where there's not like a week between games. There's the week and a half. There was a couple weeks after the regular season. Has it gone on so long in that would they be better off pushing up the season a little bit, starting a week earlier, maybe having one bye week instead of two. And then you either have, I think it would be the ultimate goal would be, you know, that January 1st championship game. But if they did worst case, the semifinals over New Year, and then just wait one more week to do the championship game.
Do you know everybody's going to hate me when I say this? And it's never, and let me just preface this, it's never going to happen. I'm in favor of shortening the regular season. Because I think, and now this is not going to be fair to the teams that don't make the playoff, right? But I would be in favor of, and I've said this for a long time, you get one exhibition game in like the first or second week of August, maybe the second week of August. So you've got a little bit of fall camp under your belt, and that's against your FCS or group of five teams. You play 10 regular season games, and you determine how many you want. But you could do all 10 conference games now. Let's say you keep the Big Ten situation and you do one non-conference against another Power Five opponent or Notre Dame, and then you play a nine-game conference schedule. Then you play your conference championship, and then, as you mentioned, you progress. I'd like to see it get to January 1st or maybe even the week after, where you play all of maybe the semifinals on January 1st and then the national championship on January 8th, as we've seen previous years. But that's not going to happen. I don't think you can wait this long. I think there's just too much competition. I think at some point, depending on who the teams are as well, you're going to have fans that lose interest. Like, I think Ohio State and Notre Dame are huge brands, so it didn't hurt them this year. But I'm trying to think of an example of what might, if Arizona State and if it was Arizona State and Notre Dame, probably not getting as many fans watching that game. You're not getting as many casual fans because you've got college basketball, you've got the NFL, you've got the NBA in action. So I would like to see it shortened. I don't know if there's a way you can do it where the championship's on January 1st. I think you could do it to where maybe the championship is on January.
I do not hate you, Dustin, for bringing that up. I do not hate you. However, I do believe it's unrealistic. Now, you're going old school. I'm old enough to remember when it was a 10-game regular season, then went to 11, then to 12. And I don't know if that would happen because of the money involved. What I do believe can happen is the argument always for those conference championship games is there's too much money involved in it. Yeah. Well, my thinking is get rid of those, but replace it with more playoff games. So if you just started one week earlier, that week zero when hardly anybody plays. And I don't know if it's going to be the case every year now, but like this year you had two byes. How about keeping it to one bye? You save another week. And then if you don't have the conference championship games, you've now saved 3 weeks of the season. So you could literally start your first round of playoffs like around Thanksgiving weekend. And instead of saying, okay, we'll wait two more weeks, you know, you play every week, maybe there's one gap in there, but doing that, you could literally get done for January 1st or worst case, you know, the weekend after. And I think that would, somebody brought up, and I thought it was a good point that January 1st, New Year's used to be all about college football. Yep. January weekends are all about NFL football. Could you still own that weekend and do it that way, Dustin?
I think you could. And here's another solution that would never happen. But you could even, Jim, with your proposed plan, I think you could keep conference championship games. Let's knock off one game. So you're getting an 11-game schedule. But then I don't know if you remember what they did for the COVID year. But basically, they had the championship game, but then they had, it was divisions and how they matched up, basically. And we're going to have a big final week. So you could say, you know what, you are going to get 12 games, but 3 and 4 are going to play each other, 5 and 6 are going to play each other, however you wanted the math to work out. Doesn't matter to me. But that would be another way to get a full 12-game schedule and do it. But I agree. I think that this has gone on too long. And look, we're talking about 2 weeks, but I'm going to be honest, until Sunday, I didn't remember that there was a game until Monday.
All right. On that note, we'll finish up quarter number three. One more segment to go. Stay with us. Every day is a great day to join us at Cafe 210 West to enjoy our daily drink specials. Mondays, it's the Cafe Tea Pitcher for $5. Tuesday, Smirnoff Pitchers for $7. Wednesday, Bacardi Pitchers are $7. And Thursdays, enjoy Cafe Tea Pitchers for $5. All week, we have half-off draft beer and cafe tea from 9 to 11 p.m. and 6 to 8 p.m. on Fridays. So get the gang together and come on down to Cafe 210.
Welcome back to the Keystone Kickoff Show, brought to you by Hulk Daddy Hazy IPA, award-winning beer by Greater Good Brewing, built by Penn Staters for PA. Look for the green can at your local retailer.
Hello and welcome back to the Keystone Kickoff Show. I'm Jim Galante. He's Dustin Schutte. It's quarter four of our show. And Dustin is now getting over dog issues, ripping up toys in front of you, Dustin, right?
Yeah, I'm going to have to get out the shot vac and sweep up some of this extra stuffing that's all over the floor now.
All right. Well, when we left in quarter three, you and I were fixing everything wrong with the college football playoff. And the way I put that, everything wrong, that makes it sound too negative. I thought it was a great success. I really do. I do think there are some tweaks that could be done. And I don't know if it'll happen in this first year. As we talked about earlier, the contract is such, you need a unanimous decision, and there's always going to be somebody, well, that's not in my favor, so I'm going to vote against it. But I think pushing the season up a bit is the answer for college football. I think it would help a lot. And the other part to that, where we talked about the possibility of that first round being end of November, say, how about two rounds of home games?
Yes. Yes.
And, you know, then because I think one of the other things that they found out was some of these games, and I don't know what the situation was for attendance for the championship game with Ohio State and Notre Dame. The Super Bowl does not matter who's playing. It's on a neutral field. It's an event. So there's enough people without a rooting interest who will be there. I don't think the college football playoffs has created that atmosphere yet, and maybe it will over time, but I do. In talking with people that I know in the Penn State community, it was both individuals and businesses that cater to people traveling. You just weren't going to get fans who, in the Penn State scenario, even though they had one home playoff game, if you wanted to see every game, you would have had to go to Indianapolis for the conference championship game, then out to Arizona, then down to Miami, then to Atlanta had they made it to the championship game. Boy, that's asking a lot of people. Whereas if you do play it at home, you get the built-in – well, first of all, you get the atmosphere of college football on campus, which is one of the great things about college football, Dustin.
Yeah, I agree. I love those first round games. I wanted another round of those. And would we have had different results? I think probably, right? If Oregon, Georgia, those teams are playing at home, we might see a little bit different outcome. But I think, yeah, a lot of the reason why we love college football is because of the pageantry and the tradition and everything. And even if it's really, really cold, it's still a lot of fun. And they do it in the NFL, so why can't you do it in college? So that's something I would agree with. I think it is asking too much of people to spend, gosh, I don't even want to think about how much people had to pay in terms of lodging, flights, travel, meals, tickets, all that stuff to get to those games. That had to be insane. So I agree with you. I think if you had even just two rounds, because then that puts you at the semifinals, with the semifinals being bowl games, and then obviously, as you mentioned, the national championship being kind of a standalone event that everybody knows, I think that makes it a lot more manageable for me.
Yes, I would love that to be the case. And mentioning the weather, the fact is, like right now, we saw in the NFL in Buffalo, in Philadelphia with the weather's like in mid-January, early to mid-December, you know, and I'll talk about Pennsylvania and Penn State. The weather typically is not bad in December. Now, we saw Penn State SMU. It was pretty cold that day. That was unusual. That was at least 10 degrees colder than normal for that particular date in Pennsylvania. And if you would start it earlier and you'd have earlier in December games instead of December 20th, if it was December 1st and December 8th, you know, it's not going to be balmy. It's not going to be 72 right. degrees, but it's going to be fairly comfortable most years.
Yeah. And I think a big reason why, man, I'm a conspiracy theorist on this, Jim. I think a big reason why people who don't want that maybe are in the South.
Get over it.
Bowl games, correct. The bowl games have always been advantageous to them because it's their climate. And it's they get to run their style of, as we you know seen in the past, they'll try to throw the football in Madison in November. Right? They'll try to launch those 90-yard touchdown passes at Beaver Stadium when it's 4 degrees outside, right? Like, that's part of the advantage. And that's what I think should be. If you play really well throughout the course of the season, you earn home field advantage. Again, we saw it. It was tremendous. We had great turnouts at those games. I think it added a level of excitement. I think you could do that for two full rounds. And it would just be tremendous. Like, I am in favor of two straight home games for these. And before I forget, you know the other thing that was really nice about this 12-team playoff, Jim? And it happens in the NCAA tournament as well. After that first weekend, and after we saw the results from the quarterfinal round, do you know how quickly the Ole Miss should have been in? Alabama should have been in. South Carolina should have been in. All that stuff, gone. Like, just, we didn't hear about it. We feel like we have a true champion. It's the same thing you have in college basketball. That first weekend, you'll say, oh, X and Y team should have been in. This team had a better resume, blah, blah, blah. But by the Sweet 16, that is no longer a conversation. We still go back to 2014 and wonder if Baylor or TCU should have been in over Ohio State. Or other teams, should TCU have been in the year that they got blown out by Georgia? Like, there's just so many different things that we still discuss. And I don't think the 12-team playoff, those first rounds, everybody was real mouthy. And then after the second round, everybody kind of stopped and been like, yeah, we think we found our top 8 teams.
And a couple of things to that. It didn't hurt that Alabama got embarrassed by Michigan and South Carolina by Illinois.
True.
That didn't hurt either. And I think the other part to it, too, is, and I saw this again, the argument of, well, that Michigan-Ohio State game got cheapened in the regular season. The Notre Dame-Northern Illinois upset game got cheapened because it didn't matter because Notre Dame still made the playoffs. But my counter argument to that is look at what Ohio State needed to do to win this championship. They won 4 games against 4 top 10 teams. Notre Dame won 3 games against top 10 teams to get to the final. Remember that argument we kept hearing that it was about who you beat? Guess what? To get through this gauntlet with the 12 teams, you've got to beat 3 or 4 high-level teams to win a championship. I feel pretty good right now that Ohio State is the best team in the country. Notre Dame, you might argue Oregon, an Oregon-Notre Dame game. But you know what? Notre Dame played so well to get that far. I'm not counting on Oregon beating Notre Dame. So I do think we ended up with the two best teams in the playoff championship game.
I do too. I mean, I think you saw that with Notre Dame. They had to beat Georgia, Penn State, and then they went up against Ohio State. Like you said, Ohio State had to beat Tennessee. They had to beat Oregon again. They had to beat Texas, and then they beat Notre Dame. Like, I don't know what more you'd want them to do. And it cheapened the regular season. It's funny that only happens when it's like the losses. Nobody wants to talk about how much it heightens some of those other games down the stretch. right? Like, if Notre Dame loses to USC in the final game, they're done. Right? They're not. They're probably not getting in. Ohio State, Indiana. I think there was a level of, for Ohio State, we have to win this game or our shots, their shot is done. And I know later they lost to Michigan, but, you know, there's just a lot. To me, there are a lot more games that mattered. And again, maybe the Big Ten wasn't a great example, but if you look at the Big 12, there were legitimately like six or eight teams that had a chance to go to the Big 12 championship game in that final week. So they were all vying for a playoff spot. And so even though the Big 12 wasn't good, it kept all of those fan bases invested basically until the final weekend in November. Like, that, to me, that's a good thing for college football. And I think that the people that don't like it are just the elitists who want to see the same 8 to 10 teams dominated.
Well, the ones who don't like it are the Southeast Conference teams and their fans.
Correct. That's true.
And they won't be happy until there's 10 SEC teams out of the 12 playoff teams. But if you look, I would argue that this was probably as interesting a Southeast Conference race as we've seen in years, because it wasn't like, well, it's going to be Georgia and Alabama in the end, and everybody else is playing for, you know, third best team and you know, who goes to the Citrus Bowl. There were legitimately a lot of teams. Now, I know Ole Miss, South Carolina, and Alabama were not happy that they weren't chosen. Well, we all know. Don't lose to Vanderbilt, okay? Did I ever mention that to you before? If Alabama wanted to get in, it was pretty simple. Don't lose to Vanderbilt, okay?
Yeah.
But the fact that you had those three teams on the outside looking in and being that close, that made you had, what, 6, 7, 8 Southeast Conference teams who felt they should make it. Every game was important to all of them, not just Georgia and Alabama.
Yeah, and I don't remember Ole Miss's. They had done the stretch, but I know they lost to Florida fairly late in the season. So, again, when you say cheapens, when people talk about cheapening the losses, like, that kept Ole Miss out. The game against Oklahoma late, that kept Alabama out. I'm not familiar with South Carolina's schedule at all, but Shane Beamer got beat by Illinois, so let's just disregard that. Like, I don't – just made everything so much more interesting. Like, those games – mattered. And I don't care what people say, if you want to say it takes away from the best regular season or the most meaningful regular season, I've said this before, every year for God knows how long, you started the college football season off and half the teams are eliminated from a national championship. No chance a Mountain West, a MAC, or anybody win a national championship. How does that make the regular season more meaningful? Now all of those teams have a chance, maybe not a good one, but they at least have something. And to me, that makes it more meaningful.
They've got a shot. They got a shot. And I think it also creates a goal, you know, instead of making it to the Weed Whacker Bowl, hey, Indiana, Illinois, they have a chance to make the playoffs. All right, Dustin, that's got to be the last word. Thank you so much. Thank you all for listening. Make sure you join us next time on the Keystone Kickoff Show. Every day is a great day to join us at Cafe 210 West to enjoy our daily drink specials. Mondays, it's the Cafe Tea Pitcher for $5. Tuesday, Smirnoff Pitchers for $7. Wednesday, Bacardi Pitchers are $7. And Thursdays, enjoy Cafe Tea Pitchers for $5. All week, we have half-off draft beer and cafe tea from 9 to 11 p.m. and 6 to 8 p.m. on Fridays. So get the gang together and come on down to Cafe 210.